be good to go.
Thank you, Owen.
That's for emergencies only.
Arr, Larry's here? Where? Arr.
Just to let you know where it's going on, Larry Binder just walked in the meeting. Let's take a moment. Such a high energy level in here tonight. Let's take a moment and just invite God into his meeting. Father God, we thank you for tonight, and we thank you for this room. We thank you for the energy. We thank you for the circus and carnival atmosphere. Woo! We thank you for the 12-step house. We thank you for the specific group and the servants inside this group that have been carrying this message for so many years. We thank you for the people that came before us and make this message possible. Lord, we ask you to remove anything from this room that would keep us from listening to your message, any disturbances, any distractions. We thank you that even in the moments where we forget about you, that you never forget about us. And we thank you that when we didn't know you, that you stood right by the door waiting for us. We're so very grateful. We ask you to bless our time tonight together. We pray all these things in your name. Amen. Amen. Hi, everybody. My name is Stevie Bean. I'm a grateful alcoholic and a proud member of the West Side Men's Group. Nice. It's so good to be here with you guys tonight. Can you feel the energy in height? It's like electro. Woo! Wow. I don't know what's going to happen, but it's going to be crazy. It's going to be noteworthy, that's for sure. Where's that? Okay, we're going to be good. All right. Wow. If you haven't been here before, we're doing the steps, the 12 steps. We're in the fifth step this week, and we're going to be talking about some action tonight. We're going to be doing a little bit of recap over the last four steps, and then we're going to be talking about into action. And we're going to be talking about admitting to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. How many people, just by a show of hands, were here last week for the four step, just so I know? Okay, so quite a lot of people. I'm going to do just a brief recap. Just in case Chris O'Brien doesn't know the four step, I'm going to recap it. Take it easy. The last 4 weeks, 5 weeks, because we did two steps on the third step. We did a 3 and then a 3.2. The reason we break the third step into two parts, or at least the reason that I break the third step, that's a personal thing, that's not Alcoholics Anonymous, is because I believe that the first step of the first part of the third step is making a decision to turn our life and our will over to the care of God, and I believe that the second part of that is actually how we go about that. And I believe it's not something where we just want to just rapidly fire through it. The Big Book actually says that if we haven't taken a thorough third step, it's possible that we would drink again. It also says it for this step also. So we're going to go over that tonight, which is the fifth step. And for anyone that hasn't done the fifth step or hasn't done the fourth step, this is a great place to be in this meeting tonight. Because you don't have to have you don't have to have already done the fourth or the fifth step. It's a great time for you guys to come in. If you guys are out there outside the doors. Oh, okay, make it easy. Outside the doors, if you haven't done the fourth or fifth step, or if you guys haven't done the fourth or fifth step, this is a perfect time for you to be inside this room. Because what they'll still do is, it'll get you excited, hopefully by the end of the meeting, you'll be excited about putting pen to paper. You'll be excited about, if you haven't taken a third step, making a decision to turn your life and your will over to the care of God. If you're here on your first week, or if you're here and you haven't even admitted that you are powerless, we say welcome. Like our friend Paulie says, you're off the hook. And that's really true a statement. You never have to use any type of chemicals. You never have to drink again. As long as you live one day at a time, even if you want to. I was listening to an old timer this morning, and he was talking about that even though over the last 20 or 25 or 30 years that he had, he's wanted to take a drink, but he hasn't. And I'm sure Frank would agree. There's times in our lives where we want to take a drink. Is there anybody in here that has alcoholism tonight? I just want to make sure. There's a couple alcoholics in here tonight. So if you have alcoholism, it's a very good chance that during your lifetime, depending on where you're at in your lifetime, and not depending on how much time and sobriety you have, you will think about taking a drink. Now, I'm not saying that the overwhelming compulsion is going to come back, because that hasn't happened to me in the last 9 years. I've never had the overwhelming compulsion to use any type of chemical. Praise God for that. But that's only by His grace. It's only by His grace. So none of us get a free ride. One of the things that I heard this weekend at a retreat that I was at is that none of us are drunk proof. And that was coming from a man that had, what, Steve, 43 years. 43 years. He said no one was drunk proof. And then he went on to prove his point that he said a woman in good standing in his home group in Boston. Was it Boston? It was someplace other than Florida, so that usually means Boston. But wherever his home group was, other than Florida, that there was a woman with 36 years, Tony, that took a drink, and she was a member in good standing. It wasn't like she had stopped going to meetings. It wasn't like she was out of the program. She was in the program, and she took a drink. Because we don't have alcoholism, we have alcoholism. Where's Todd M.? Todd M. here tonight? It's something that we do every day. It's something that we take seriously today. Whether you have 9 years or 19 years or if you have 49 years or whatever it is. If you start resting on your laurels, like what happened to me in my 6 year of sobriety last time around, if you start resting on your laurels, it's very possible that you could be speaking in Bark again. Bark detox. I mean, not as a speaker, as one of the residents, you just wouldn't be speaking in there. And that's what happened to me. I was going around town, I was telling my story all over the place in my 4th year, in my 5th year, I was speaking in treatment centers, in my 6th year, in my 7th year, I was also speaking in treatment centers, I just was in paper slippers. And I went from the Fort Lauderdale Hospital to Bark Detox to a halfway house, and I was speaking all over the place as a resident in pajamas. Because I thought that I had alcoholism. I thought that when I was in my 20s, I had a horrible drug addiction in Minnesota. I'm originally from New York, and I thought I had a terrible drug addiction, but I had never taken a thorough first step. I never admitted that I was powerless over alcohol. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I admitted that I was powerless over drugs, but I never, ever thought that I was powerless over alcohol. Now, I said I was an alcoholic, like if I was in the Lions Club, and I would say I was a lion, or if I was in any type of organization, I would say I was in that organization just to fit in, but I never felt like I was an alcoholic. Even in my home group, in the back room, in the 11-step group, I would go around the room and everyone would say they were alcoholics. And I would say I was an alcoholic just because my sponsor said if you said you were an alcoholic and an addict, you had to put $2 in. So I was trying to save money. But no, in all seriousness, I wanted to just be part of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because for me, the answer to my problem, the answer to my disease, is in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And how I got that is because after studying the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and seeing all the correlations to another book that I'm absolutely in love with, I realized that this book will enable me to get closer to God. And I found out that God has the answer to all my problems today. All my problems. In page 449 of the big book, or 417, depending on which edition you have, it says, acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. And one of the things that I disagree with some of my friends is I don't believe that acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. I believe that acceptance is the answer to a lot of my problems today. I believe that God has the answer to all my problems. Speak up. Oh, me too. Okay, perfect. So if God has the answer to all my problems today, and He does, and I come into the problem and I come into the program and I don't really have a relationship with God, but everyone's saying that God is the answer to my problems, then there's a problem there. If everybody in the program is nodding their head as I say, God is the answer to all my problems, but I come into the program and I have a God of my parents' understanding, and I have a God of other people's understanding, how am I going to have a God of someone else's understanding come into my life and change me? That's a problem. So then there's this program, it's called Alcoholics Anonymous, and there are these 12 steps. And these 12 steps will enable you, if taken these steps with a sponsor and serious about it, these 12 steps will get you to a place where you have a personal relationship with God. Our friend Dion talks about that the 12 steps are like 12 magical steps that get you closer and closer and closer and closer to a cascading waterfall of spirituality and the knowledge of God and the presence of God. And then when you get to the end of the 12 steps, you're underneath the waterfall. And I think that's a beautiful way to put it. What the 12 steps have done for me, and especially this specific step that we're going to talk about tonight, has removed a lot of the wreckage of my past, and then a lot of the wreckage of my present that I was creating, and cleared away all that garbage so that I could actually feel the sunlight of the Spirit. I could actually be in the presence of God and not feel like a dirty mess. You know, the big book talks about, the sunlight of the Spirit, like I just said. The big book talks about having the sunlight of the Spirit shine through into our lives. That's not the exact quote. But if the sunlight can't come through the windows of your house because the windows of your house are all full with mud and caked on dirt and the sunlight is not shining through and you can't feel the presence of God, you're going to be in a program where everyone's talking about God and you're even going to be in a worse condition than you were before you came in. And you don't have to raise your hands, but I know that people understand what I'm talking about. So you enter this program and really all you want to do is stop drinking. And really all you want to do is feel better. And really all you want to do is stop getting hit on the head and getting hurt, and you want to stop all that. You don't really, you didn't really even think that getting closer to God was one of the top 25 things in your life. It doesn't really come into play when you're drinking and drugging. It's not something that you're sitting on a bar stool going, you know what, if I could just get closer to God. You know, when I was underneath the stairs in my house and I made a house underneath the stairs. And I was peeking out the house windows underneath the stairs. I never once thought, you know, if I could just get closer, if my relationship with God was just closer, this would all be just fantastic. I never once thought that. What I thought was if I could stop drinking, everything would get better. And when we first come in, we think that if we stop drinking, everything will get better. And guess what happens? We stop drinking and everything what? Does not get better. It gets better because we stop drinking, but the promises don't come true in our life. And then we're sitting in the middle of our second step, or we're sitting in the beginning steps, and we're saying, what happened? I thought everything was supposed to get better. I thought I was going to have a life beyond my wildest dreams, and you really haven't put in any of the work in. You haven't done a thorough fourth step. You haven't done a thorough house cleaning. You know, they say clean house, help others, trust God. Trust God, clean house, help others. Trust God. Clean house, help others. But we don't want to do that. We just want to help others. We want to come in, and we want to get clean and sober, and we want to tell other people how to do it. We don't want to clean our house, and we don't want to trust God. We want to trust God in some of the areas. We want to maybe get on our knees in the morning, and we want to say to God, God, please keep me sober, and then we want to do everything else that we want to do during the day. As a matter of fact, while we're on our knees, or at least while I was on my knees, I used to say a diligent prayer, because my sponsor said, get on your knees in the morning, and get on your knees at night. And I used to be on my knees and I'd say, God, please keep me sober. Jerry Bear told me, I want you to say, God, please keep you sober, keep you away from thinking about a drink or a drug, and help you to be maximum service to other alcoholics and other people. So I used to say that. And as I was on my knees, and as my knees would hit a 45 degree angle, I would want to keep everything else in my life, just give God my alcoholism. And that's not what God wants. God's not looking to have a relationship with their alcoholism. God has enough alcoholics. What he wants to do is wants to have a right relationship with you. He wants to have a relationship with all of you. And I was walking around in the program and I was giving God my relationship with alcohol, and I was staying sober. I was staying sober and I was staying clean and I was going to meetings and I was acting dirty, as my friend Mason likes to say. And I was having personal problems in my relationships. And here's something that I want you to know, that even before we get to this 10th step, you can take an inventory right now. How are your personal relationships going in your life? Are you having personal relationship problems with people in Alcoholics Anonymous? Are you going into meetings and you're having problems when you're sitting next to a person? Are you having confrontations inside meetings? Are you punching people in the face inside the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous? Are you getting thrown out of AA clubs? If when you're driving down Federal Highway, you're not sure if you'll ever get home at the end of after a meeting. If any of that stuff is happening to you like it was happening to me, it's very possible that you're not practicing these principles in all your affairs. And the reason that I know Owen, and the reason I'm such good friends with Owen, is because we used to be in a home group many, many years ago, and I got into a fist fight in that home group, in a group this size, while my sponsor was the one that was sharing the steps. And I thought I was defending him. Because there was a guy that was actually speaking while my sponsor was speaking. And I thought that I was the protector of Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought that that was my job. And I went up to the guy after the meeting, a big guy from Brooklyn, you know, a giant guy that was definitely not afraid of me. And I told him about himself. And I told him that he shouldn't be speaking inside of AA. Didn't he understand the rules? And because I'm really a fraidy cat inside and I'm just afraid he was going to hit me first, just in case, I hit him first. In front of a room of all these kind of people, inside Alcoholics Anonymous, while my sponsor was speaking, going over the steps. He was probably going over humility, Owen, I'm sure. So we clear out the room, and as Owen was there and Richard was there, and they broke us up apart, and that's the way that I conducted myself inside Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And in two places, I was asked not to come back. And that's really weird, to be asked not to come back into AA when you're sober. You know, because really the requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking unless you have horrible behavior. And then they can, in certain clubhouses, they can ask you not to come back. And they ask me not to come back. And that's not a good place to be. So in my seventh year of sobriety, for those that are here for the first time, because I see a lot of new faces, in my seventh year of sobriety, I picked up my medallion, I thanked my home group, and I went to order Chinese food. And I told my wife I was ordering to go, and I brought her home to the house, and I ordered a glass of Japanese rice wine with my Chinese food to celebrate my seven-year anniversary. And the reason I tell you that story is this, because there was no way if you were to ask me at that moment, and I had already pre-warned my family that I was going to be drinking, and they thought it wasn't a good idea. However, my family had never seen me like that. They saw me as a drug addict in the streets of New York, and they saw me as a drug addict after I got out of treatment in Minnesota. But they had never seen me as an alcoholic. And my wife married me sober. We had a big AA wedding. I was 4 years sober. We went to New Orleans for our honeymoon. I was sober. She had never seen me drunk. And she had always thought that my stories from the podium were, you know, because I like to exaggerate. So she always thought I maybe was a little bit flamboyant with my stories. You know, like in Minnesota where I thought the police were there and I rolled myself up in a carpet and I rolled and I rolled and I rolled and I rolled and I put myself in the middle of the room and I thought that nobody would see me. I was hiding. And I thought it was a good hiding place. Right in the middle of the room, gigantic carpet. Ray, you can relate to that story. So... my wife thought I was exaggerating. You know, she didn't think that those are true stories. She thought those are cute stories and I exaggerate, and that's how I get people to understand that it's important to surrender to the steps. And then it happened to us. And then what happened was I took a drink and then the drink took me and then I became a big book alcoholic. It turned out that God knew that I was never going to be able to surrender to the idea of me being powerless over alcohol unless I was proved that I was powerless over alcohol. Now, I'm going to tell you something. Don't misunderstand what I just said. He wasn't intending for me to relapse. It wasn't like God was saying that this was a good thing. But God will use our worst intentions and turn them to good if we allow him. So that's what he did in my life. I relapsed. I wound up in a halfway house with Eddie 9 years ago last week. And my family was devastated. My parents had to drive down from New York. It was 9/11 week. They had, their daughter, my sister, had just lost her best friend in the attack on the Twin Towers. And in my selfishness, she called me up to tell me that her best friend died. And I said, so what? So what your best friend died? I didn't say so what your best friend died. She said to me, Jill is missing. She was in the towers. And I said, well, what does that have to do with me? Because I'm sitting in front of a television drinking myself into a stupor and the whole world, I was watching the towers fall and I thought I was watching, you know, a movie. I thought it was a towering inferno. I didn't have anything to do. I was like, what does that have to do with me? Because an alcoholic in the throes of alcoholism is self-centered and self-seeking at best. And I stepped it up. I was a monster. And also, I want to tell you in my defense, I never thought I was going to get through that week. I never thought I really would have to worry about if the towers fell because I was not planning on making it alive out there that week. And my parents came down and they kicked open the door, kind of, you know, they kicked in the door. And then that started my journey of me telling my story in detoxes while I was a resident of the detoxes. And then I would go into the detoxes and Michael, I would have all the answers. I would have all the answers because I had just had 7 years. And you know, I'm in detox with people that never been in the program before, so I could sound like a genius. You know, I'm in there and I'm like, listen, I know you have paper slippers and I know I have paper slippers, but let me tell you something. I got some knowledge behind these paper slippers. Okay, so if you know what's good for you, you'll listen to how I work the program. And Eddie will tell you, I started having step workshops at our halfway house. Brian knows, he was really sponsoring. I started having step workshops at our halfway house. I was like 3 weeks sober. I was holding big book seminars and nobody showed up, but I was holding them. You know, I put a little sign on the door, I have a big book seminar, no one showed up. But I was holding them. Because I thought you might have what I had and might want what I had, and I know that I needed to be available. And I tell you all that to say this. When I finally got dragged into the Fort Lauderdale Hospital, and my wife was not taking my calls, and my dad was not taking my calls, and my mom was not taking my calls, And the halfway house director came over to my to the Fort Lauderdale Hospital, and I was on the psychiatric ward, and he said to me, we'd like to invite you to come to Liberty House, which is around the corner from here. And I said, no, I appreciate that, Jeff, that you're offering me to come to Liberty House, but I live in a house in Hollywood with my wife. And he said, no, you don't. And I said, well, what do you mean by that? He said, you've been served with a restraining order, and your parents went with your wife to have divorce papers drawn up. And you're going to be homeless as of tomorrow. Or you can come to the halfway house. Your wife has agreed to pay for it as long as you don't call her. And I go, door two, I'm coming to the halfway house. Because homeless, I wasn't doing homeless. I mean, I could tell you right now that homeless was not going to be comfortable. I could see that already. And that's how I started my journey in recovery. And our first day in recovery, Eddie and myself, we were in Victory, which is an AA meeting in Fort Lauderdale at 8:30 in the morning. And I was sitting there, and he was sitting there, and we both raised our hand for under 30 days, and we were sitting right next to each other. And he said he was coming back, and I said I was coming back. And then that night, when we both returned to the halfway house, we happened to be roommates. Yeah. And that started our journey, and I picked up 9 years the last week, and he'll be picking up 9 years this week. And that's a total blessing. And we've been doing this thing with Brian M. and different guys, and for the last 9 years, Brian M. for the last 12 years, and we're just going around and just loving on what God has done in our lives. And the reason that there was a higher energy in here earlier is I think because the energy should be coming from the podium on how excited I am to be here and how grateful I am to be here. So the first step for me was easy. I was totally powerless and I totally couldn't stop. And then God showed me that I was a real alcoholic because I was going to Walgreens every day after work. I couldn't pass through Walgreens. It turns out for 7 years, there was a alcohol next to Walgreens. Walgreens is two parts. I don't know if you know that. There's an alcohol store and a card store. And I was always knowing where the card store was, and I never knew where alcohol. The moment I took a drink, the moment I took that Japanese rice wine, all of a sudden it was like every Walgreens had an alcohol store. I never even seen them. I was like, wow, when did you guys open this up? They're like 12 years ago. I'm like, I never seen it. And then where I would go in 7-Eleven on Federal Highway down in Dania, all of a sudden I would see people selling hard alcohol out in the streets. I'm like, wow, I never seen all those people selling all those things around my house. It turns out it's all there. But when you're in the program and you're thinking God and you're thinking sober, you don't see that. But then as soon as you're in the other deal, all of a sudden the monsters come out. I was listening to a guy at a retreat this week, and he said that when he went over to Wendy's, he was approached by a bunch of people that were selling drugs. It turns out that I knew that this guy had been taking drugs inside the program, and that's what the drug addicts see. You know, water seeks his own level. In 9 years, after I got out of bar, nobody has ever asked me if I wanted drugs. Are you straight? What's up, man? You straight? Nobody's ever said that to me. But as soon as I relapsed, everybody was like, yo, you straight? And I'm like, no. Because that's the type of energy you put out. So nobody asks me those type of questions now. Because the only thing listen to this, I'm really straight. I'm good. I want to get better, I want to get closer, but I'm good. And when I go to New York and I'm walking with my parents and we're in Manhattan, we're in Times Square, nobody asks me if I want drugs. Nobody ever comes up to me, go, nobody ever whispers to me anymore. Nobody does that. I'm walking, I'm with my wife, I'm holding her hands, I'm looking at, I have a nice smile on my face, I'm not looking seedy, nobody asks me. So, here's a little thing, maybe just throw it at you. If people are asking you everywhere you go, where you're walking on the street and everyone's asking you, you're straight, it's very possible that you have some type of reservation in your mind, because it doesn't happen to all of us. That's a different way of life. So anyway, new thing. So I get into the program, I admit I'm powerless. But then I'm looking at it all on the page, and I realize there's nothing I can do about it. I want to drink. I remember one time I said to my mom, I said, Mom, they had just caught me in the house. And they had just caught me doing some hard alcohol in the house again. And I'm standing there, and I'm totally embarrassed. And I said to my mom, listen, you think you got me. You don't got me. I could run down the stairs and run across the train tracks and I'll be picking up hard alcohol right now. And my mother said to me, and then what? Yeah, right. What do you mean, and then what? In 5 minutes, I'll be getting high. She goes, and then what? Right. Exactly. And then what? When you start thinking about and then what, a whole new awareness comes upon you. Yeah, and then what? And then what? And in misery and despair. And at that moment, as they took me over to the Fort Lauderdale Hospital, I hung up my tennis shoes. And I wasn't running anymore. I mean, I was tired, so it was easy to hang up the tennis shoes, but I wasn't running anymore. And then I got into there, and then I realized there was no way that I was going to be able to stop thinking about drinking and drugging. There was no way I was going to be able to stop thinking about drinking and drugging. It wasn't going to happen. So they said to me, Jerry said to me, maybe you can get a power greater than yourself that could return you to sanity. Now, listen, I believe in God. It's not that sometimes I use a thing and I say I came in here an atheist or an agnostic, but I was really an ignoramus. I like to say that because it's cute. But really, it's not true. I believed in God like God of the Hallmark card. Like, I did believe that God was real. I did believe that God created the heavens, and I did believe that he made the sun go up. But I didn't think that he had anything to do with me. And I didn't think that I didn't think it was a day-to-day type God. I didn't think it was a God that cared about this type of stuff. I thought it was a God that cared about the universe. So when they said to me, came to believe that a power greater than yourselves could restore your sanity, I didn't really get the whole thing. But my sponsor said, start praying in the morning on your knees and asking God to keep you sober and start thanking him at night. And I started doing that. And then in the third step, which we spoke about last week, the third step is making a decision to turn our life and our will over to the care of God. And then I did that. I did that by continuing to pray in the morning, pray at night, and continuing to go to page 63 in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, where it talks about turning our life and our will over to the care of God. And then my sponsor said to me, memorize the third step prayer. And I did. And I'm going to just give you something. If you don't know the third step prayer, go to the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Write down the third step prayer where it says, God, I offer myself to you. Write it down on a little card and put it in your wallet. Put it in wherever you go. And when you go to speak in places, when you go to speak to treatment centers, when you go to speak at a halfway house, when you go to speak wherever, say the third step prayer. Because what God is looking to do is speak through you. He's not looking for Brian or Church or Ben to show up. He wants to show up. Because I don't know if you know that. God has a much better story than we do. And he wants to speak through us. So we surrender that before we speak. And we say, God, I offer myself to you. And we say the prayer. And then the evidence that you took a thorough third step is that you'll have a pen in hand, you'll have a big book in hand, and you'll start writing the fourth step. And last week we spoke about doing the fourth step. And I just, you know, there were some revelations that came last week when we were speaking. And I spoke about going into a closet and removing all the unwanted stuff that you don't need. And going in there with a sponsor and having the sponsor help you to remove some of that stuff. And going in there and then writing it all down on paper. We talked about fears. We talked about harms caused others. We talked about sexual misconduct. And we talked about resentments. I don't know if anybody was here for that. So we got it all down. And then here's where we're at. What do you do with it? What do you do with all that after you wrote it down? I have to do a little bit of reading. But it's good reading. Into action. Having made our personal inventory, what would we do about it? We have tried to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator to discover the obstacles in our path. And we take all this information and we make an appointment with our sponsor, we make an appointment with our rabbi, we make an appointment with our minister, whoever it is. For me, I made my appointment with my sponsor. I flew out to California and we did it. And what was great about doing it with my sponsor is my sponsor had knowledge of alcoholism. You want to do it with someone that has knowledge of your peculiarities, of your specific ailment. Sometimes when you go have a meeting with a priest or a minister or a rabbi, I've met with priests, I've met with ministers, and they don't really understand the intricacies of the alcoholic mind. They don't really understand how it is to have this type of thinking. And you want to share it with another alcoholic, and here's the most important thing. You want to voice it so that God hears it and that it's removed. You want to be able to leave the fifth step a totally new person, but not new person, but not totally new person. You want to be able to leave the fifth step way better than you went into it. And this is what I mean by that. You got all this garbage. You got all these bags that we spoke about last week. You got bags of fear. You got bags of lust. Joe, you got two bags of lust. You got harms caused other. You got all these bags. And you show up with your sponsor. You got this whole U-Haul of stuff. You show up with your sponsor. You got all this stuff. And it's dragging you down. Some people in here tonight, I'm going to tell you something. The look on your faces, I'm going to be honest with you. You got baggage. You got baggage. You're dragging stuff around. Whatever it is. Maybe you did a fifth step 4 years ago. Maybe you need to do another fifth step. Because you're not walking around happy, joyous, and free. Why are you carrying around your baggage? If you've already asked God to forgive you and he's already forgiven you, why haven't you forgiven you? Do you know better than God? Maybe you just need to get with another human being and you just need to share it and have that problem shared with another human being and have it voiced out. Because the way that some of the people are conducting themselves inside Alcoholics Anonymous, they're carrying baggage. And they're walking around with the baggage and they're wondering why nobody's sitting next to them. There's nobody sitting there because there's no place near you to sit next to you with all your baggage.
So you walk into this meeting with your sponsor, and you bring all this baggage, and one by one, you put the baggage on the table, you open up the bag, and you start putting it out. Harry, Sally, Dad, Mom, the bank, the police, dogs. You put it all out on the table. You put it all out on the table. That was for Todd. You put it out all on the table. And some of the stuff you still want to keep. You see, some of the stuff, like, I know it's Mark, I know it's brutal. Some of the stuff in with your bags on the counter, you want to keep. You want to keep some of the anger because you think it protects you. You want to keep some of the selfishness because you think that maybe nobody understands you. You want to keep some of it. But this is where the key is. And this is why Richard, my friend Richard Spike, we were having a conversation earlier. This is why having a great sponsor is so important. Because your sponsor is going to be able to see the baggage that you're still holding. You see, you put all the baggage on the table, you really got a little Gucci bag in the side. You got a little Gucci bag. And you know, the thing about the Gucci bag is you're not going to show it. You're not going to, you know, you're keeping it on the side. Some of you guys got faux Gucci, but the other people got real Gucci. And you're holding it behind you, and you got the Gucci behind you, and this is what you're thinking. This is what you're thinking. My sponsor's not going to want to hear this. I don't need to share with him. I'm just going to go directly to God with it. No. No, no, that's not what the step says. The step says, another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs, we gave it to God, to another human being. The exact nature of our wrongs. We got to put it out. We got to put it on the table. And the other thing is, well, if the person knows this type of my behavior, they're not going to like me. If my sponsor knows this type of behavior, they're not going to like me. And that's the way I went into my fourth step with Jerry. And I gave him all my bags. I was like, anger, resentment, lust. I put it all on the table. I was mentioning people from when I was 10. Tommy Gonzalez when I was 5. I was mentioning people, nobody, all stuff that wasn't important. And I'm bringing up stuff, you know, Susie in the second grade, I looked down her shirt, you know, all that kind of stuff. And my sponsor's like, that's it? That's it? You're giving me Susie in the second grade? You've been good from 4 years old to 40? And I'm like, yeah, you know, it hasn't been, well, I said, Jerry, you have to understand, I did a four-step already about 8 years ago. And he goes, yeah, and it's 8 years later, you got nothing else? And I had this Gucci bag in the back. You know, I had the Gucci bag, and I brought it out. And the Gucci bag, I was only going to tell him what was in the front compartments. And so I gave him a couple things. I gave him a couple things. I gave him a couple things in the front. And my sponsor was listening. And then he folds the chairs and he gets up. And I think I'm off the hook. And he starts walking and he says, put the chairs down. And I go, okay. And I put the chairs down. And he goes like this. He says to me, what have you forgotten or omitted? What do you need to tell me? Sit down. And it was a moment of silence. And I was admitting a big one. I was admitting a big one. Because I was thinking it was personal. Because over here, listen, it's not like I was making it up. You know, I was in the big book, and in step four, it says this. To sum up sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal, for guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves into helping others. We think of their needs and we work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge, when to yield would mean heartache. So I'm thinking to myself, this is between me and my God, my sexual stuff. It's not really between this guy over here. And then what I didn't read was the next paragraph. The next paragraph is the deal. Now I know it's 400 degrees in here, but I want you to hear about this next paragraph, okay? This is important. If we have been thorough about our personal inventory, we have written down a lot. Right there. Listen to that line. If we have been thorough about our personal house cleaning, we have written down a lot. That already means, Todd, if you've already written down 2 pages, you're not doing a thorough house cleaning. Already you know, if you haven't written a lot, you're already behind the ball. And here's the other thing, what you might want to say. I got it all up here. I don't really need to write it down. That's not a personal inventory. That's like a personal story. That's like something different. That's like maybe something you want to send to Oprah. But what you want to do in the program is you want to write it down. And the next line says, we have listed and analyzed our resentments. You don't list and analyze your resentments by yourself. You list and analyze your resentments with who? Your sponsor. Okay? And then the next line, we have begin to comprehend their futility and their fatality. Their futility and their fatality. What does that mean? Their futility, their uselessness, and their fatality, it kills. You ever hear that before? Anyone ever tell you that if you are walking around with your resentments, it kills? In the big book, it says that resentment is the number one offender. It also says to drink is what? To die. So their futility and their fatality. Those two things. So if you don't think it's a big deal, it is. I don't know if you guys were here last week when I did the 50,000 feet with the pilot and going down. But it's serious business what we're talking about here. And then the next line says, in the same place, that many people that haven't done a thorough four-step, what? Drink again. That their sobriety will be precarious. At best. Who wants to have precarious at best sobriety? Who wants to have walking by a bar and all of a sudden you're walking by a bar and you slip and then you wind up in a bar stool? Who wants to have that type of sobriety? I certainly don't. So my sponsor says to me, what have you omitted? And then I took it out. This is where it was, Monk. I took it out. The private in the back behind the jacuzzi stuff right there. Put it over there. And my sponsor says to me, is that all it is? And at that moment, I knew I had just walked through that triumphant arc that you guys were talking about. I knew that I actually had taken a third step because I had actually told him, another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. And this is what my sponsor said to me. And this is what I was alluding to before. And maybe I got a little ahead of myself. You didn't understand what I was saying. My sponsor said, I want you to ask God to forgive you for those things. And then when you finish asking God to forgive you for those things, you need to forgive you for those things. Because you don't know better than God, do you, Steve? And I go, well, what do you mean by that? And this is stuff that I carried for a long time. I want to hold on to this. He goes, so then you haven't taken a thorough third step because you're actually saying that you know more than God. You're actually more powerful than God. You're not the children and he's the director. He's not the principal and you are his agents. You're the big shot, Steve. You know better than God. God's going to forgive you, but you're not going to forgive yourself. He said, don't you think that that's a little egotistical? And it sounded exactly egotistical to me. And then I read in another book where it says that God forgives us as far as the east is to the west. That he's not looking to hold any of that stuff against us. And I had just shared it with another human being. I was following the program. I was following the steps. I was actually in the program. You see, when you finish the fifth step, not only are you going to have a new freedom and a new happiness, but you're going to know that you're the real deal. Because you'll actually be taking pen to paper and you're going to be doing something, Ken, that is actually not in our nature to discuss our wrongs. Because most of us were private people. A lot of us drowned ourselves in beer cups. A lot of us did our things because we didn't want to share with another human being. And then when we do that, we take away some of the reasons why we used to get drunk. And then it says this beautiful thing here. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. If you have already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you have made a good beginning. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big truths about yourself. And you just leave them there. You just take all your garbage. Picture this. All your garbage that you've written down, you share with a sponsor, and you have, and listen to this. Anybody in here have resentments against their sponsor? Anybody? Nobody has resentments against their sponsor? Of course, my guys all have resentments. If you don't have resentments against your sponsor, you're probably not calling your sponsor enough. But all the things that you have against your sponsor, you get to just dump all your garbage during that day. And it's your one day of kind of payback with your sponsor. Because even though your sponsor's been hard to get in touch with, even though your sponsor's been a little bit elusive, during that day, he or she has to pay attention. Because if they don't, it gets out. You know, it gets out. They're like, Eddie was sleeping during the fifth step. Stevie was sleeping during the fifth step. So even if they're slithered, they have to pretend that they're paying attention. And you just dump it. You just dump it. And guess what? No good work can happen in step 6 or 7 with you carrying that garbage into 6 and 7. Because you're going to want to walk into 6 and 7, step 6 and 7, which is where the rubber meets the road and where the men and the women get separated from the boys and the girls. You're going to want to walk into 6 and 7 as clean as possible. Now, you're not walking in clean. You still have your defects. You're going to still have your problems. And that's what we're going to do in 6 and 7. But you don't want to be walking in with your secrets. You want to only be walking in with your defects. You want to only be walking in with the stuff that he can remove. You don't want to be walking in with the stuff that you should have already removed. That's what I'm saying. Exactly. Okay, so where are we? Let's just do a little recap. Where are we? Before I melt, because I'm just melting on right here. I'm just totally melting. We pocket our pride, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken the step, withholding nothing. Listen to this, guys, at the doors. Withholding nothing. Once we have taken the step, withholding nothing. What was it? Withholding nothing. Once we have taken the step, withholding nothing. Here's the next line. We are delighted. Anybody need a little delightment in their life? I can use a little delightment. I like to have a little, Frankie, a little delightment. Johnny, a little delightment. I love to be delighted. Withholding nothing, Mark. Withholding nothing. We are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Page 75. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel a nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. It's almost like an echo. It's like a stereo. We feel we're on a broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. In all seriousness, I want you to hear this last line. If you're not feeling that you're walking hand in hand on a broad highway with the Spirit of the universe, maybe a little backtracking, maybe a little going back to this step is what's needed. Because if you want to have a life beyond your wildest dreams, you're going to have to be thorough about this part of the program. Many, many great people have drank because they are walking around with secrets. We feel we are on a broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. I'll see you guys next week.